And my head above water is all that I know how to do. But it's kind of beautiful, oh, oh, underneath it all.
So you're reconsidering this idea of interviewing everyday people in our lives on the podcast.
Yeah, there was an exchange I had with the guy. There, we had a guy like...
A handyman
working on handyman stuff around the house.
Jack of all trades. He comes in with the hammers and the saws and
wood stuff.
Lumber.
Nails.
Mm-hmm, lumbering around the house.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
I found him on Craigslist, which is how you find everybody who is worth a damn. I'm not saying there aren't quality people on Craigslist. I'm just saying it's a danger. I think everybody who has internet consciousness after like the year 1999 knows this, except me.
Yes.
I'm late to the party.
In the exact same way. I had a conversation with him. So he had been working on the house for like 3 days. And the last day he was here, you know, he wasn't wearing a mask. I wasn't wearing a mask. I'm vaccinated. I assumed he was vaccinated.
Yeah, we're all the world of vaccinated people now.
We're vaccinated, sure. Right? And then he says something like, oh, the Fauci thing is crazy, right? I was like, oh, what do you mean? He's like, oh, you know, it's all in a lab. He's like, oh, did they confirm that for sure yet? He's like, oh, yeah, it's confirmed. It's out there. And I was like, oh, I didn't know it was like totally confirmed. I mean, I'm not ruling it out. Like, it was like really deadly and, you know, like absolutely terrifying and caused all this.
I think it's the truth, no matter what.
Absolutely.
I think everybody has an interest in that. The Biden administration certainly does. Sure.
Yes. And he sort of alluded to like, oh, no, the whole thing was a hoax, you know.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, well, and that's why, you know, he was talking about something like he had been exposed to it and didn't get it.
Right, right.
Yeah. And then and he was like, so I know that I'm immune, you know, because I was exposed to it and I didn't get it. And I was like, oh, but you got the vaccine, right? And he's like, oh, no. And then I was like, but you got the antibodies test and you have the antibodies? Oh, no, I didn't get that test either.
Oh,
I was like, you have been in our house for 3 days and didn't disclose that you didn't have the vaccine.
I was upstairs in my office and I just heard you kind of in like a concerned tone of voice use the word anomaly. And I was like, what is she talking about with the handyman? Like I couldn't make the snippets that I was hearing make sense in any imagined narrative. Mm-hmm. And now I'm just very sorry. And I feel like I wish that we had like a political ideology sort of metal detector when people walked into the house. I guess not wearing a mask is one indication, but yes. You know, I guess maybe we should be asking.
Yeah.
I asked Mary if it would be like totally antisocial to have a sign on the front of the door that was like, if you aren't vaccinated fully, please wear a mask. But I was like, I can't, I feel like a big asshole doing that, you know. It just feels like I don't trust the people I've invited into my home. But now I think maybe we're gonna have to go ahead and do that.
I think we might have to start doing that.
Yeah, because also like if you believe that COVID was a hoax, you are also like homophobic and racist. I don't have to ask about the
connection. It's a litmus test,
right? It is,
absolutely.
It's one of those things. It's like these are, you know, like for some reason, if somebody is like a huge fan of Rocky Horror Picture Show, they also really, really love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah. Just, I don't know why these things are related. They just are.
And that is an unpopular opinion we both share, that Buffy the Vampire Slayer is.
I hate to say it. I had an ex who forced me to watch the whole series from like the first episode to the last one, like knowing the whole time that I wasn't interested in it.
Yeah.
And so it was like every day I would drive home from work and I'd be like, I'm gonna have to sit there and watch the show for like 2 hours tonight.
I literally think every person I've dated has been obsessed with Buffy. And
but
I
hasn't just made you watch it.
No. Lucky. Well, I have sat through episodes.
And I feel like I have to dance around this topic because this is a very popular with queer people. And that has been the case since I was like a teenager.
Yes.
You got to be careful with this. It's like you want to be careful with like bad-mouthing Tori Amos or Ani DiFranco. I will shit talk the latter. Never the former.
Never Queen Tori.
Never. She's beyond reproach.
Yes.
She cannot be tried by a jury as
don't
she has no peers.
Don't you dare say anything.
So we are on episode 69. Not again. Not again. Not again.
It's funny every time.
It is. It's also nice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, nice.
So episode 61, thank y'all so much for tuning in. Also, thank you so much for your incredibly generous, steadfast support of the podcast in every form.
Yeah.
We are so grateful to y'all for like the stellar glowing reviews that you've left of the pod. Oh my God, y'all just mean the world to us. Thank you for your support on Patreon. And speaking of support on Patreon, it is time for the customary.
Customs.
The ritual.
Ritual.
The all important.
Very important.
All encompassing.
North and South compass.
Reading of
the
equator.
It lies.
The names.
It
the lies.
Lies.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, got it. All right, we're on the same page. That was a roller coaster.
That was so extra. Ow, Georgie, that's... Georgie, that really hurt.
What did she do?
She's just scratching at me because she wants attention.
Yeah, it's a really, you got to be careful with it.
We need to clip her nails.
If she claws at you once and she realizes that that's a good way for her to get attention, and I know this because she has lacerated my arm like from top to bottom, from stem to stern, so many times. Yes, she needs to get her nails trimmed. We'll see when that happens. All right, do you want to start with your lies?
Yes. Wow, Blair, great job. Blair came up with a new way to express feelings called the cornucopia of feelings emotion wheel.
Hey, that sounds actually kind of nice. How does it work?
So at the...
you were expecting a follow-up
question. No follow-up question. Okay, no further questions.
That's fair. Sam B. invented a sunset extender. For those romantic or contemplative times when you wish it could last just a few minutes longer, this device makes the planet stop spinning on its axis just long enough for your selfish ass to enjoy the sunset while the rest of the world is confused.
That's insane!
I know. I know.
Blast off, doggy! Hannah and Renee are going on a trip with the first beagle into space.
Jealous. I'm jealous.
The beagle's turnip!
Don't take my dog to space. I'm calling the, not the police. I object.
Animal control.
Not that either. Oh. Leave my dog alone, everybody. That's my dog. That's your dog. Julia C. heard it through the grapevine.
Oh.
No, really. She found a way to spy on people via a grapevine cam. Oh. A real terror for privacy enthusiasts, but a real boon for busybodies and federal agents.
Spy through the grapevine. Congratulations to Kalina. She won the Good Samaritan competition. She's the best at being a person.
Put your hands together for that.
Great job, Kalina.
What a star, Kalina. That's amazing.
Yeah, we're really, really happy for you.
This bud's for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm cracking open a cold bud, Bud Light, Budweiser, sponsor the pod.
What?
I don't know. I'm desperate. Jesse went to dinner and the host told us our table would be ready in 30 minutes. I went to dinner with Jesse. Excuse me.
Okay, understood.
You following? 30 minutes, which was a bummer. And that's a long time to wait for a table. You know, we're unused to waiting for tables.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I want food now.
Right. We are, you know, also just emerging from the pandemic. It's we used to think that it was totally normal to wait for a table for 30 minutes.
Yeah, but not anymore.
Not now.
No, sucker.
We're all like fresh, red little babies just getting used to life again.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I grabbed a few packets of jam and a packet of Splenda to munch on. But our table was ready only 10 minutes.
Oh.
So,
was that the
that was
story?
Cool. Yeah, that was it. Don't look at me like that, judgment.
Oh my God. Oh, thank goodness.
What?
I was totally freaking out, and Ryan P found my yak tracks.
Thank God.
Now
you need them right now.
I need to walk in the snow and the ice. I need protection. Thank you, Ryan P.
Kaylin gave me PTSD. Pretty tart and sweet Danishes.
Oh,
thanks for the pastries, Kaylin.
Jesus Christ. Max O just got their degree in elephant science.
Stellar.
They cracked the code and found out what we've all been dying to know.
How did elephants get to be so cute?
Precious pachyderms. That's how I always think of them.
Yes.
Bless their little or big hearts.
Yeah, big heart.
I wonder how big an elephant's heart is. Do you think bigger or smaller than like a standard issue basketball? Not WNBA, like regular basketball.
Bigger.
Okay. To be decided. Rachel F. finally did it. She encouraged me to pursue my dream.
Oh.
It started when you told me a few days ago that I would make a beautiful clown. And that helped. But Rachel really helped me take the final plunge. I'm going to clown college.
I did. Well, Wyatt's face is so expressive. And like you were making your normal weird faces. And I just said, you would make an incredible clown.
It really made me feel good. And you're like, I shouldn't have said that. I was like, no, you should. Those are words of affirmation. Like, wake up, smell the coffee, sister.
Wake up, smell the roses. There is none.
I was not naked and afraid.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of naked and afraid, oh shit, you have one more lie.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Okay, well, that was a beautiful segue. Let's all just remember that moment. It seemed like that segue might have worked. It's actually a great transition into mm-hmm. what is our topic for the day.
Yes.
Which is survival.
Yes.
So we had our decompression Sunday at the end of last month, mm-hmm. which is just like a little hangout get together for our Patreon supporters at the end of every month.
Mm-hmm.
And we love doing it. And we ask a question of the day. And
yes.
I asked everyone what the last like really good TV show or movie they watched was.
Right. And mostly it was recon for me because I just like wanted a new show to watch.
And it worked.
It was great.
So that was, you know, several weeks ago now.
Yes.
And the
And I think we mentioned Naked and Afraid on the last episode of the pod, too.
Did we?
I think it might have been one of our obsessions or we, like, mentioned it.
Oh, damn. If so, I think you're right, actually. Have I already told this whole story before?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's getting to that point in life, in the night, in the week, just all of it where I'm just not sure. If this is redundant, I apologize. I'll somehow make it up to you with like tons of original content someday. But someone suggested that we watch Naked and Afraid, mm-hmm. which we have watched compulsively since then.
It's like, I know we've talked about our obsessions on this, obviously here, but it's like, It's so consuming.
I mean, it's hard to, I think, express to someone who maybe, like, doesn't have obsessive tendencies or bipolar disorder, like, mm-hmm. just exactly what we're talking about when we say that we're obsessed with something. And it's like, you know, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast before, but it shifts from, like, something that you're interested in to something you just, like, you have to do it.
Yeah.
Have to have more of it.
At every possible second that yep. isn't, like, doesn't involve work, you know?
Right, like, or like maintaining some other basic biological
yes,
function.
Like we walk the dog and as soon as we come home, it's naked and afraid
time.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. But it got us thinking, we have been, I think, more kind of distant from each other in terms of our schedules for mm-hmm. the past couple of weeks than we have in a really long time.
Yeah.
Since at least before the beginning of the pandemic when I was going to campus regularly.
Right.
We have been thinking about this, I think, sort of separately.
Yes.
Maybe it's been on my mind more than yours. Who knows? But I've been thinking a lot about the idea of survival.
Mm.
And, you know, like watching the show. I think we definitely have talked about this before. But and you know what? Like I said, just pretend like I'll try to put some new flavor on it this time. But our ancestors had to do, like, essentially this same thing, right?
Right.
Okay, now I definitely remember because we talked about, like, the hierarchy of needs and all that kind of stuff, right?
I don't.
You have this look on your face like you're very concerned, but I think
I really don't remember.
Yeah, I think this is our second go-around to this topic. But it's really interesting, like, in watching this show, you know, it's like, you know, people who have just been sent to these, like, really remote, dangerous, awful, harsh locales with another person or other people, and they're, you know, like, stripped naked, and they have a couple of tools for survival, but they kind of just have to figure it out. And it's really interesting watching it, like, when you are concerned with making, like, meeting your basic needs to survive, you don't have the energy or the bandwidth or the time or the resources to do anything else but worry about survival.
Right.
And once you have those bases covered, you know, like we talked about,
mm-hmm.
then you can begin to think about sort of higher order concerns, right? But it's sort of interesting to think about how they always make this distinction between like surviving and thriving.
Right. You know? Totally.
And like what it means to just barely scrape by, just barely make it through every day, right. You know, by the skin of your teeth rather than have an abundance of the things that you need.
Right.
And so we've just been thinking about that in different contexts. Absolutely. We haven't connected about this much, but yes. I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, no, me too. And I also I'm trying to think of the different times in my life where I've had to, where that brain sort of switches on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was involved in a very terrifying river rafting incident.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I had just broken my ankle, and so I was, I'd taken my ankle out of the boot. I was supposed to be in the boot, but my friend said that she just goes in a tube down the Green River, and she floats down in a vinyl tube, and it's really lazy. It's just like a basic, you know, just
easy peasy,
float on the river. That's mm-hmm. what, like, people do, and I'd never done it before, and it sounded like a really fun thing to do. We brought like beer and smoked weed like on the beach before we went, and I was like, this is just awesome. I'm gonna relax, I'm gonna take my boot off, it's okay. That I had ankle surgery. So we start going, about 20 minutes in, it's feeling really rough. The water's feeling pretty rough.
Yeah.
And it's overcast, and it just feels like things are moving a lot quicker than they're supposed mm-hmm. to, and nobody's out. There's nobody else out there.
Yeah.
We didn't see a single other person.
Wow.
And then things start really, really picking up to the point where, and there's like four of us girls. And at a certain point, I think we realized we were all like too drunk, you know,
for it to be safe.
Yes. And things were going so quickly that nobody could stop. Like, you couldn't stop. You couldn't get off to the side. Like, the river was moving so rapidly. And there were starting to be, like, a ton of sharp rocks. And it just switched from, like joyful, fun time.
Everything's okay.
To, I have a choice when I go down. Because, you know, we were it was what I've seen river rafting. That's what it was. It was those kinds of rapids.
Wow. Yeah.
And so going down those little, like,
and you're in a rock tube. Paths
in a vinyl inner tube. Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye.
And I had a choice once it was going so quickly, we couldn't stop,
mm-hmm.
That I had to either choose to put my foot forward or my head forward and like hold the back of my neck and go down backwards.
Damn.
And it was like one of those choices you make where you're like, oh, I'm going to go backwards and hold my head.
Right.
Or like, I am going to sacrifice my foot or my limbs to take care of my vital organs.
Damn.
It was a really weird feeling. And then one of the girls got stuck in a little whirlpool.
Yeah,
a whirlpool.
Thing.
And she, her inner tube flipped over.
Oh, shit.
And we were all going so fast that nobody could go back to her. And she was the one who was the most drunk, and we couldn't see her coming back up. And then the girl who was the least drunk came over to her and was able to, you know, but we were screaming, and this lasted for 2 hours.
Good Lord. And so it was just like the whole ride.
Yes. And then there was another girl had flipped and was closer to the rocks were much higher. So you couldn't like push yourself off to the side and get out.
Yeah.
And she was trying to claw her way up, and her hands were all bloody, like trying to get out.
Oh my God.
It was something out of a horror movie.
That just sounds horrific.
And then we passed this sign that was like, warning, class 4 rapids ahead, like guide must
and
be present.
Could not get out of
we
the water.
Couldn't get out of the water.
Holy cow.
So then eventually somehow we were able to push ourselves off to one side, but you couldn't, there was so much moss and algae on the rocks
you
that you couldn't stand up. So we crawled on the rocks and the algae and the dirt and the bugs and everything for about a half a mile.
Oh my God.
With my broken ankle. Like, it was like,
this sounds awful.
It was insane. And like, nobody I've ever talked, like, it's all I can do is kind of like talk about it.
Right.
I can't, like, you will never know what it feels right. like unless you were there. You
can't
know?
Capture the, yeah. it's like impossible to explain.
Totally.
Right?
It's, yeah. And it is like, I mean, it was the stupidest thing I've ever done. I had no idea it was going to be like that. And I just totally blame my friend Pam for putting us through that.
Honestly, it sounds like Pam's to blame on this one. Pam, God love you. It sounds like you maybe didn't do recon as thoroughly
but
as you could
have. But then what was, I felt totally gaslit because afterwards Pam was like, well, yeah, that was bad. It wasn't so bad. You know?
She's trying to downplay it.
Yeah.
She's not responsible.
I think so.
Were you able to connect with anybody that you were on the trip with afterwards?
Amanda and I are still friends.
Like, did you bond because of
that? Oh my God. Yeah. It's something I'll never forget. We'll have a bond for life.
God,
you know?
Bless.
But I remember thinking like, this is what survival feels like. Your body starts adjusting about what its primal needs are.
Damn, right.
You know, like
right.
I didn't care about bugs or dirt or anything getting all over
no.
my body. I don't care.
You just like switched your priorities because of it.
It was just I stopped caring. Yeah, it was
wow.
wild and it happened fast.
Wow. Like it felt like it went by fast, or you mean you switched into
this,
that mode?
The
fast?
Switch went in fast.
Wow, because you said y'all went from having fun to being like full on panic mode really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then because I had bruises all over my back and my legs and my butt, and it just I didn't feel a thing.
Wow. So what do you think of that now? Like, looking back on it, did you learn anything about yourself, or does it still freak you out? Or like, what did you learn about survival or the survival sort of instinct from that experience?
I think if anything, it just made me feel really connected to like an ancestral sort of thing of like, oh, this is what you do. This is what you do to survive.
Right.
Your brain and your body take care of you, you know?
Right.
It is like, it just felt like, you know, those stories you hear about like moms being able to like lift cars to save their baby, you know? Like,
absolutely.
It felt like that. It felt like all of a sudden I had this, like the adrenaline was going so seriously that it felt like I could do anything.
Have you heard of the different responses? Like, my sister sent me this article about the responses to trauma, like the fight or flight response, mm-hmm. which I didn't realize that list has expanded.
Yeah.
So there's fight, flight, fawn, or freeze.
Ooh, yeah.
Have you heard of these?
Yeah, I've heard of some of them. That really started when I was reading The Body Bears the Burden, which is like the precursor to Body Keeps Score. And I think he talks about freeze a lot. And that's sort of what I know to like my own relationship to trauma is the freeze, you know?
And is that what it sounds like? It's like deer in the headlights or
yeah.
it's just like...
Yeah, to me, what I have always felt it to be and known it to be is a little bit of dissociating.
Oh,
you know?
Right, right.
Like, you just literally space out, you know?
Yeah, my sister was talking to me about about how in a traumatic situation, like, it was talking about, this article was talking about how birth order affects responses to
Whoa.
Traumatic incidents. And
stop.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And she was talking about how when something traumatic that happened in my family, she said my youngest brother responded to it by like really, really freezing. And she said that it was like he was like catatonic. Like she was like it was like there was just no response from him at all. And I imagine that's sort of what I imagine that freeze response to be like.
Yeah.
But I guess there's this other response that's the fawn response that says that it's sort of hard for people who are experiencing it to determine that it's happening, but that this is a response where you like kind of lose your own identity and like look to other people for help and like how to deal with it.
Whoa.
So if you think about like fawning over other people, like your first response is to appease a person who might be upset or angry, or like when you try
Whoa.
To like diffuse a situation, or like
Jesus,
it's like I think it's like a people pleaser type of response.
Wow.
And you ignore your own needs and sort of like accept the needs of whatever the threat is. You look a little bothered. Do you think that you've, does the response that you are you've I've adopted.
I'm having an out of body experience.
Are you really? Hearing
this. Yeah. I didn't know this existed.
This fawn response?
No, this is like, this is huge. This is so real.
Yeah, it says,
this is it. This is my life. This is like what I've been working on unlearning. This is insane.
Yeah, it says you lack boundaries. And by it says, I mean, I feel like I'm emulating the really bad writing habits of some of my students. You lack boundaries. This is a Psychology Today article. You lack boundaries and are often taken advantage of in relationships. You're uncomfortable or threatened when asked to give an opinion. You're overwhelmed at times, but take on more if asked. Saying no to those around you is a challenge. Oh, yes. You feel self-anger and guilt. And it says the fawn response is not often discussed in PTSD, as it may be seen as simply a part of the personality of the individual.
Mm.
But it goes beyond, you know, personality types. And it says that, you know, people who have this sort of response can really be targeted by somebody who's trying to manipulate people, right? So I think that's just such an interesting,
whoa,
you know, like these, the different ways that you can respond to the trauma. But, and it wasn't necessarily, it's interesting that we're talking about, you know, like immediate types of trauma. I mean, trauma in the sense of like immediate physical danger, mm-hmm, like being in dangerous situations. Because as you brought up, there are so many different kind of components of survival that you feel like, right, you've experienced in your own life.
Right. And that's kind of what I mean is, like, I know that it seems like they might be unrelated, like this idea of like naked and afraid survival and like me either protecting my internal organs and my brain or my, you know, like that's may seem different than like, you know, sexual trauma or violence or emotional trauma, but it's not. Like, what I have been really thinking about is the way that the brain protects itself,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and the way that the body protects itself.
Yeah.
And those are all similar. Like, right, they're all similar responses. They're, yeah, all just different mechanisms for survival.
Right. Totally. I mean, in a way, I think even I've been thinking about survival for the past couple of weeks in terms of mental health, you, mm-hmm, know, and thinking about how, you know, depression, I think, can put you into this position where you're just like dragging yourself around, just doing the bare minimum that you can to like keep your basic functions going, you, yeah, know? And I know that like you've been there, I've been there. And I was thinking about it in relation to like suicide and self-harm, mm, that in this really, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Counterintuitive. In this really counterintuitive way, like suicidal thoughts and suicidality, which I know we've talked about in recent episodes, is a survival response.
Mm.
You know, you wouldn't think it would be because it seems as if it's the total opposite, but,
right,
it's a way of making the condition of being alive tolerable by any means necessary, right? Like, just,
wow, I never thought of that.
Getting through it. And so, yeah, I'm thinking about what, wow, I've been thinking about what it means to, you know, because I imagine this is something that's explored in Body Keeps the Score. I don't know how much your body really knows the difference between, you know, like an imminent physical threat and, you know, like really vivid post-traumatic stress disorder or,
right,
like a really vivid or serious depressive episode. Or I would think that it's sort of the, like, primal part of the brain is sort of like responding in pretty similar,
exactly,
ways.
I mean, that's what Norman Doidge says in, you know, I think this, forgot what he's basically the, like the neuroplasticity guy.
Right.
So his whole philosophy and thought is that, like, if you close your eyes and imagine something happening to you, the body like responds as if it's happening.
Wow.
Like if you try hard enough, like for certain things, that's what can happen.
Right.
You know? And like, so certain ghosts can live with you.
Yeah, right.
Certain experiences, and especially with people with PTSD, their body and their brain is responding exactly as if the thing happened.
Right.
Now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, and I think I've been also sort of reflecting on the, you know, because I've been reading this massive book about the Enlightenment that I don't know if I'm ever going to actually get through. And I've been thinking about how Enlightenment thinkers really like, it was sort of one of the first eras in modern history in which people kind of looked, okay, I'm in modern history. I'm talking about like the Western intellectual tradition, right? So this is like, which of course is like the vast majority of everything that I learned in school, unfortunately. But in like the Western intellectual tradition, the Enlightenment marked this period where philosophers and thinkers and theologians and writers and authors were thinking beyond like, what do you need to do in order to survive? Or thinking beyond like, you know, life is just this veil of tears during which you are intended to suffer. And this is especially prominent in like Christian thought, you know, that sort of like Calvinist, you know, Puritan, really intense, like the meaning of life is to suffer.
Suffering.
That you're just deserts in heaven.
Yeah, you were born filth and you will die filth.
Right. No, honestly.
The only salvation is through God. And even then you are not clean.
Right. Yes. And I know I touched on this when I was talking about reading this book and in previous episodes, but that idea that is enshrined in our own country's founding documents that people have a right to pursue happiness is a, you know, an Enlightenment ideal. This idea that like you should be sort of free to live a secular life in which you pursue freedom from suffering and through which people are entitled to be free from suffering, and not just free from suffering, but pursue, you know, actual happiness. That's like a relatively new idea, right?
Right.
Like this idea that, and you know, I was thinking about it. My brother, who's a physician, was talking about this. You know, he often is involved in these situations where there are patients who are, you know, in their 80s or 90s and who are, you know, being kept alive by machines in the hospital and who have no family members. And the hospital has to, like, you know, form these committees where they have to make these grueling decisions about what to do for end of life care for people. And I was talking to him about it and I was like, you know, whenever I read books from, you know, about people from, I don't know, not even that long ago, you know, the early 1900s, the late 1800s, or this, you know, this Enlightenment era people, it's like they would get a toothache at like age 30 and end up dying from it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And consequently, like I'm thinking about how like, you know, in like the Alexander Hamilton era, it was really common for politicians to be like, you know what, fuck this. Let's go outside and duel each other.
Yeah.
Like, let's just see, like one of us is going to die. And they just really readily accept that.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like death was, they were like willing to accept that idea of dying a lot more easily. Like
right.
Life was at once more fragile, but sort of less, taken less seriously or
right.
something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe because dying was so easy. Like, honestly, they would get like, you know, a horse would step on somebody's foot and they'd be like, I don't know, it's infected. So I'm probably gonna end up dying from it. You know,
yeah,
like, and
totally.
I'm 25 years old, you know? But so we I think live in a like an era where I think we are like we have like almost a guarantee of not just surviving, but living a really long time and being healthy and being happy. Mm-hmm. Not like a total guarantee, but like statistically more so than generations
right.
past.
Yeah.
For the first time, like in human history.
Right.
I mean, this is, you know, I think it was Steven Pinker who wrote that book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, talking about how we live in a more peaceful time than any era in recorded history.
Right.
Like crime is lower than it has been in any era in recorded history. Yeah. And it's really hard, I know, to look at this in any kind of like congratulatory way when we're coming off of an unprecedented global pandemic in which,
right.
you know, a million people are dead. But it's also like in the grand scheme of things, you know, like as far as like grand historical patterns go,
mm-hmm.
this is a time of, you know, like at least for developed countries, this time of like unprecedented longevity.
Right.
You know, so survival means different things. But at the same time, there are like existential threats to our continued happiness and well-being on this planet, like climate change, like the clock is ticking.
Totally.
So I don't know. I think I don't know if I have any like grand conclusions to come to about that, except that, you know, I think our generation is like one of the first to kind of like conceptualize what it means to survive and to do well in this, you know, in this world really differently.
Right. Totally. But I think that's the development of all of these mechanisms to say, like, this is the mechanism for survival. I think we've really, like, the brain, the evolutionary brain is like developed so many different mechanisms to survive. And like, when you really look at it, to see all the different iterations of it, it's perseverance, like it's resilience. It's actually quite beautiful. And, you know, I've been talking about this in my workshop that, like, for people who use food as a coping mechanism, it is like been so demonized culturally that, like, you know, oh, that's like the worst possible coping mechanism you can have, mm-hmm. because it makes you fat or because you gain weight, or, you know, it's like, actually, out of all the fucking things that you could do, like, that's a really healthy coping mechanism.
Totally.
You know, like,
when there are so many bad options.
Yes.
Absolutely. No kidding.
And it's, and
you mean like when there could be like so many like much more.
Oh my God.
Destructive ways of coping.
Yes, absolutely. And if like, and if the result of that is that you like get a little bigger or get bigger, like, fuck it, you know, like,
absolutely.
Like, why is there so much invested in that when, like, this, you know, obviously I have all my feelings about the healthism and the moralism of it, but like, it is like, what a gift it is to be able to like to eat more and to have comfort in food. Like, food is pleasurable and
to have it, enjoyable to take comfort in, right?
Yeah, and like, thank God. And what, like, how amazing is that? That food can serve that purpose of comfort. Like, oh, I'm so grateful for, like, the experiences that I've had, too. And that, like, food has been there for me. And it is, like, and it, I think it's so sad how demonized it is for being, like, something that's comforting.
Right.
You know, and people are like, oh, I'm a comfort eater. I'm like, yeah, everybody is, you know, like,
food, yeah, that's not a vice. Comforting.
No,
it shouldn't be thought of that
food
way.
Food isn't a vice. It's not something you're addicted to. You,
like,
know,
I'm sure this has come up in your workshop, but things being called like guilty pleasures, like indulgences, or like being sinful, right? Like devil's food cake and all that. I don't know if that's actually where devil's food came from, but, you know, it might as well be.
No, totally. I'm trying to think of her name, Ellen, she's the writer of she's the founder of intuitive eating. She basically has this, have I said this before? I don't think so, but she's the,
we're having a day of the podcast where everyone is going to forgive us for the level of
they're like, you actually did survival like, two weeks ago.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Ellen Resch? No.
I'm looking it up right now.
Thank you, honey.
See. I'm coming in clutch for you.
Yeah, huh? Baby.
Ellen Natter?
No.
Whoops, sorry. No free ads.
Evelyn Tribbley. That's basically the same.
Tribbley.
Okay, Evelyn Tribbley. I think it's Evelyn Tribbley who says this, basically, like, this gorgeous metaphor about food. And she talks about, like, if you've ever been to the ocean and you've been playing in the waves and you accidentally get sucked under, right, and you're under for a lot longer than you wanted to. And you know, as soon as you come up for air, you're not going to take a normal breath. You're taking a gasp. You're
right. Yes, absolutely.
You know,
yes,
to get that full breath, to get your body recalibrated. And she says, and this is what sort of the principle of intuitive eating is, that like, the body after restriction, it is a survival mechanism to recalibrate itself.
Right.
So dieting is a form of restriction. It's a psychological and physical restriction. So post-restriction, your body is going to force you to overcompensate for that period of restriction. So like, when people take that big breath out of air, they don't say you're addicted to air.
Right.
You know, that's the body doing its natural physiological job.
Absolutely.
To like get oxygen in through the rest of your lungs.
Isn't
you know?
It, you know, actually, one of the reasons I think it's been so refreshing to watch Naked and Afraid is seeing like food and body weight and stuff discussed in like a different way that to me feels so much more like practical and
healthy.
Right.
Where there's like a celebration of getting enough calories to fuel their body.
Right.
And like a real being tuned into like, I haven't had enough protein, or, you know, we'd need to eat more fat in order for that to happen. Or like, oh, we eat sugar and we have this little burst of energy that can enable us to hunt more. And like this, oh, I was already kind of like, my body weight was kind of low going into this, so I really need to watch that. Or like, it's an asset if you come in with more body weight because yeah. you can survive longer. Like, there was something really refreshing about like watching TV and seeing eating and food and calories and weight discussed in a way that is like so detached from all of our cultural signifiers.
Totally.
Like, it's totally gone. I haven't heard anybody say anything like, I'm losing weight really fast, you know, which is great, but like, you know,
totally.
There's no weird shit about it
there's
at all.
There's not. You're totally right. And like, if anything, it's like, I'm losing a lot of weight. This is really, really dangerous.
Right,
this
exactly.
Really, this is really scary.
Like, they'll walk away and be like, "Have you? She's looking really thin. Like, yeah. she doesn't look good. Like, she's looking, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a, like, not to say that that's, like, I'm not trying to put any moral judgment on thinness. I just mean, you know what I mean? Like,
no, but rapid weight loss.
Right.
In
nature.
In nature is really bad.
Right.
So, like, to have 30-day, you know, whatever, like intermittent fasting, like being promoted as this like beacon of health,
right,
is like really weird.
Yeah. And it's like, there's something really refreshing about like, these survivalists are also so cued in to what their body's telling them about like how much water they need, or like how much food they need, or even like what specific nutrients or protein that they're lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see, though, when they're not getting enough of it, or when they are not fueling themselves properly, the effect it has on their mental health, the yeah. effect it has on their ability to think about anything else,
yeah.
this like really, I mean, like it's, and it's, of course it's an issue of survival, but like the signals you get from your body are all like, you need to eat. You're not getting enough food. Like I need, you know, even to like make my synapses fire and make my brain work properly.
Right.
I need to like lubricate my brain with food. I need food.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just telling you the other day that I don't know why it occurred to me. I was like listening to a playlist and, you know, it was like songs from the, you know, like pop punk songs from the '90s or something. All of them are about like breakups or being in love, or, you know, all these different, like me, like, you know, moving away from all of your friends and stuff like this. And I was like, isn't it interesting that there are no songs about like the joy of weight loss or something? Like, you know, like it's not even a moving enough
yeah
experience to warrant that kind of musing or that kind of like romance, you know?
Totally.
It's in this different category of life that nothing else really goes in. It's like separate from all of our other conversations about health in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It gets its own kind of category of like moral judgment and baggage. And
totally. Yeah. And just, I don't know, just thinking about all the different forms of survival and coping mechanisms that we all have to like keep us alive and keep us going. And isn't it funny that some of these coping mechanisms can really harm us, like drinking, you
right.
know, and like,
yeah,
you know, I'm thinking about like dealing with bipolar disorder and trying to deal with my panic attacks in some way and just being like, oh my God, I have to have a drink.
Right, right.
I have to have a drink and smoke a pack of cigarettes and that's how I'm going to get through this panic attack.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And now I know, I feel like I have a healthier relationship to it where I'm like, oh, there are other ways to have, you know, there are other coping mechanisms.
Right.
And I think it's the same way with food. What, you know, we talked with Judith Matz in my workshop. We did like a Q&A with her. And basically what some of these principles for intuitive eating are as well is like, food can absolutely be a comfort. It can absolutely be a valid coping mechanism. What people tend to run into issues if they think it's an issue, if they don't like that, it's because they don't want it to be the only coping mechanism.
Right.
You know, it's about diversifying your portfolio of coping.
Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, what's so funny, I hope this doesn't derail you or mm-mm. the conversation too much, but I was thinking, like, isn't it interesting that we're in enough of, like, the post-pandemic era, that we're talking about survival on this episode, and we haven't really even broached the topic of the COVID-19 pandemic. Like, it's enough in our rearview mirror, yeah. You know? And I've been thinking about the, you know, Kant and other Enlightenment thinkers really emphasize this idea. Like, Kant has what he called the categorical imperative, that you treat other people as ends in themselves, right? Like, you don't take advantage of other people or exploit other people or use other people for your own ends, you know? And I've been thinking about, like, really in the early days of the pandemic, or even, you know, as the pandemic, like, progressed, the people who were, like, essential workers, and even people who were, like, you know, driving DoorDash deliveries, and, like, you know, while the pandemic is, like, saturating every part of our lives, like, the fact that there wasn't more, like, sustained outrage over how much danger we asked, like, already really vulnerable people to put themselves right. in. And I'm just realizing, like, as you were talking, I was thinking, like, this is a very privileged conversation to be having about survival. And I know everything is relative, you know, and to say nothing of, wow. you know, people in developing countries, or people who are in the global South, or people who, you know, experience, you know, like, generations of deprivation and poverty and violence. Like, I'm putting all of that aside, because I don't know the extent to which, you know, pitting hardship against sure. other hardship is really useful. But, like, the fact that we put so much kind of judgment and create such a culture of shame around what people do to cope with, you know, even during, like, we were talking about this mm-hmm. period of, like, unprecedented sort of, like, in general, like, peace and public health and yeah. longevity and prosperity, like, there's still, you know, a world of really difficult, you know, emotionally taxing, like, what feels unsurvivable to somebody is contingent and contextual. Right. And, like, what people struggle to survive through depends on right. so many different things, and not even necessarily, like, their own ability to, you know, like, be strong and tough or put up with stuff. But, you know, like, we're all just in such different ecosystems. Right. I don't know. I don't know to the extent to which these thoughts are even connecting.
No, but I think it's important to at least acknowledge, you know, the difference of survival for some, you know, the privilege of certain levels of survival.
Yeah, but yeah. I also think, I know that this doesn't seem to make sense with what I just said, and maybe it's because I'm not putting thoughts together very well, but I also just want to say it's all relative, mm-hmm. you know, like, what feels unsurvivably, insurmountably bad to someone is totally dependent on context and what kind of support they have and what kind of resources they have. And, you know, I think we are all trying to, like, survive different. It's like, you're just, like, shaking the, what is it called when you look through the thing and there's, like, the kaleidoscope. Yeah. Thank yeah. you. When you're, like, everybody just has, like, a different kaleidoscope of, you know, advantages and skills, but also, like, disadvantages and, you know, different abilities to deal with shit. Like, we all were just dealt, like, a different stack of crystals in the kaleidoscope. Right. And, like you said, with your river rafting adventure, not that, okay, that was flippant, but, like,
wow, Bethany.
Wow. Wow. Like, you can't bottle that and, like, explain to somebody what that felt like.
Yeah.
And we're all trapped in that, right? Like, yeah. I can't tell you how bad this feels to me, you yeah. know, or how scary this feels to me. But, like, I think it's really important for us to, like, meet people where they are and take people's suffering and hardship and difficulty and pain seriously and not, because I think a lot of people suffer in silence thinking, like, you know, what I'm going through is not that bad compared to what other people are going through, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, you're talking about coping mechanisms and somehow
that no, got me thinking that's about all. It. No, I really, really appreciate that. That's so real.
Thank you, honey.
Wow.
You think I'm, like, so real?
You're, like, so real and, like, so smart.
Thanks.
Thanks, babe. You're, like, so pretty.
Thank you. I've been tanning. have you survived a tanning bed before?
Oh my God. I went tanning one time when I was 18.
In the tanning bed?
Yeah.
Did you put on the little goggles?
No, I didn't have anything. I didn't even put on anything. No? And I totally burned. I burned in stripes. And I was like, this was the worst experience ever. And my friends were like, well, did you put on sunscreen or something or whatever I was supposed to have on? I was like,
no.
No, of course not.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about, like, you and I, when we were on a walk, talking about youth being wasted on the young, you know?
Yes.
Like, at the time when my body was in its, like, peak physical condition, when I was, like, at my healthiest, like, I mean, you know, your body going through, like, natural sort of, like, I mean, in terms of growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the aging process hadn't really started.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I mean.
The cell regeneration was thank still you. At its peak.
Right, thank you. That's what I mean. Like, all I wanted to do was just, like, all of my life was just geared toward where I could sit around with my friends and smoke cigarettes. You know?
That's so true.
And you know, I think, like, just like with anything else in life, you don't really start, like, freaking out about, like, oh my God, I'm going to die someday. Like, you don't grasp that until it starts, like, happening to you. Like, I made this Instagram video when that day that I cut my thumb and had to go to the urgent care clinic. And I took this video and I was wearing a mask, but as I was talking, it was just like the way the light was hitting my face in a way that it doesn't in my normal selfie spots, you know? And I was like, oh shit, my crow's feet. Like, wow. Like, I've got some hardcore wrinkles going on in my eyes. Like, I'm getting old, you know? And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And I think it's sexy and I really like it. But also there's that one little part of me that's like, you're going to die someday. Like, you're getting old. Like, this can't last forever. And, I know that, like, thinking about one's old mortality is, like, a different conversation, you know, than talking about survival. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. These are also the kind of thoughts I have when I, let's say, it's the summer vacation and I am not doing things I should be doing for my job. Mm-hmm. And I have lots of free time. These are the kind of thoughts that come into my mind. You know?
Speaking of interesting thoughts like that, do you want to start and move on to our segment? Because I'm very excited.
Yes, let's do that.
I am dying to know what stupid questions you have.
Yes. Do you want to hear mine? Do you want to alternate?
Yes, let's alternate.
So the premise of this segment is we are going to ask questions that we have always been curious about, but have felt too stupid to ask because they're dumb questions. Mm-hmm. Dumb questions. Is that a more concise?
Dumb questions hour.
Dumb questions. We're just going to let these questions out.
Mm-hmm.
Have we had the, you know, fortitude to talk about them before? No. And that's what makes this special.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you get us started?
See, I'm already embarrassed to ask. Where do we actually pee from?
Okay, this one I can answer. It's your urethra.
Okay, but the urethra. Okay, I can't. I'm gonna need a diagram.
I will gladly show you
will
a diagram.
You show me?
There's a lot of openings down there. Yeah, this is not shameful.
There's a lot of stuff going on down there, and I have been told different things. I remember asking my mom not to put my mom on blast, but my mom told me that I peed from two different places. So.
Oh, you mean like at once?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, that's not true. I had a really good seventh grade science teacher who explained this to us,
that's cool.
It stuck with me, and that's the only reason that I know.
Okay.
But it's confusing.
Thank you.
There are openings galore.
There are at least three.
Yes.
That I know of.
At least. Wait till you hear about the ornacular gland.
What?
I just made it up.
Oh my God. That was very terrifying.
Okay. My question is, no matter how somebody explains this to me, I've never understood how a tattoo stays on your skin. Like, where is it? In your skin? On your skin?
I don't know.
Right?
It like dyes your skin, isn't it?
It's like that it's there forever in exactly the same way. That's fucking crazy, right?
That is true. It becomes your skin.
Right. Right. It does, right?
The skin becomes her.
Death becomes her.
Okay. How are dogs so good?
Oh, God.
But that's not quite the question. I just want to know, like, how do dogs get along so well with humans? Like,
well, did I tell you about that study that I read?
Yeah, but it still doesn't make sense to me. Like, they were it's evolution.
Well, I'll tell our listeners. So they now sort of conclude, people who, you know, study animal behavioral sciences, that puppies have an innate, you know, ability to to interact with human beings. Like they're born with the ability to do that from they've evolved to be able to do that. I think it's just like with anything else, like dogs that are better at interacting with humans, like
right.
survive, and then they breed with other dogs who are good at interacting with mm-hmm. humans, and eventually the like structures of their brain change, yeah. I think, right?
And we're good at caring for dogs.
We are good. That's, I think, the more interesting part of the spectrum. Why do we love dogs so much?
Because they're so cute.
They're so good. Georgie. Okay, I think
she's asleep.
She's
I know when we have a baby, you are gonna go and wake the baby up so you can say 1,000%.
1,000%. And also I'm gonna do a bunch of linguistics experiments.
Okay, also I'm realizing this isn't fair because you've actually answered like two of my stupid questions and I can't answer
about Oh, you're gonna be able to.
Okay. Can we ever it's your turn.
How does Advil know where to go, like when you have a headache?
I want to know the same thing.
And does it go everywhere? Because that's not enough.
Okay, wait.
Do you know this one?
Yes.
Okay, tell me.
I think I looked this up once. The Advil doesn't go to the spot of pain. It goes into the brain. It goes into your pain centers in
that's
the brain.
That's right. Because your pain is not really at the spot where it's happening.
You're not.
Shit.
Pain isn't really happening in that spot. Yeah.
Damn.
It's going into your brain.
Blow my mind, Daddy. Okay, what's your next one?
Can we ever get rid of nuclear weapons? Like, did they ever?
Is this Yahoo answer?
No!
I don't know. Because
like, can they ever go away? Destroy them?
Because I don't know. Because, like, when there's nuclear waste, like, I think that one of the disposal mechanisms is burying it. Like, I don't know if you can destroy nuclear material.
Right.
I really don't know that.
See, this isn't a stupid question, but it is a stupid question.
That Don DeLillo book that I read, Underworld, mm-hmm. the character's occupation was, like, dealing with nuclear waste. Whoa. It's, like, that's a huge fucking deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question. I have no idea.
We need answers. Okay, what's your next one?
Man, the other day, a link came up on Google. It was, like, I Googled something and a link to a Yahoo Answers thing came up and I was like, really? And I clicked on it and it was like, Yahoo Answers shut down on May, whatever. I was like, that was cruel.
Oh, that's so mean.
It reminds me of, have I told you this story before, that when I was like, I don't know, 6 or 7, there was this place. It was like an indoor play place. It was awesome. There's like a castle inside. It was called Happy's Place because this guy was a clown, not a scary clown, but we all loved him, named Happy, ran the place. Yeah. And one day, I had, like, my 6th birthday party there. Cute. I loved this place.
Oh, my God.
And one day, my dad was like, do you want to go to Happy's Place? It was, like, Saturday. And we pulled up to the parking spot. And my dad was like, there's a note on the door. What is that? And it was a note that just, it was, like, a piece of notebook paper taped to the door that and just handwriting just said, Happy's Place is closed forever. And for some reason, it really, that was... like a defining shock of my childhood.
Oh my God. That's so traumatic.
Thank you for witnessing this.
Also, the metaphor.
Happy's Place is closed forever.
Yep. That's a book. Honey, you have to write that.
I'm going
to
write a book called Happy's Place is Closed Forever. Yeah. It's going to be my memoir.
I'm obsessed with that.
Okay. My next question is, I think I've mused about this on the pod before, but why does it take so long for prescriptions to get filled?
Do they really take that long?
I feel like it takes like up to an hour.
Yeah.
Like it seems to me like it should just be like counting the pills and put it in the bottle, close it up, you're done.
Well, they have like a lot of stuff to do. They have other things in line. You're not the only one who needs pills.
So do they just start with like a huge backlog like every day?
Yeah.
That's why? It just seems to me like it should be like a vending machine.
They well, I'm sure they also have to like verify with the...
I guess you're right.
With the...
Okay, now you've answered one of my questions. Are you happy now?
No, we should be keeping score. I don't know.
Yes, you do. No, you're right.
No, that's not right.
You're right.
I don't know.
You made me feel foolish.
They have to ring up birthday cards at the same time and resent everyone. I've heard that from every pharmacist. They're like, God damn it.
I love my pharmacy, like my pharmacist. Mm-hmm. I still go to our old pharmacy, which is like a good half hour drive away because I love them so much.
They're so good.
And every time I go in, I'm like, have people just been a fucking huge pain in the ass today? Yeah. And they're like, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And I hear all about it. And we talk about astrology and like, I'm obsessed with them. I love everyone at our pharmacy. I will keep going there until the end of time.
That's amazing.
No matter where we live, we could live across the country. Okay, what's your next question?
How does carbonation work?
I don't know. know? That's a really good question.
What do you mean?
That's a because like it'll stay carbonated.
Yes.
Like it, so it's like aerating the water some carbonating the water somehow. But like how it doesn't just go flat right away.
I'm sorry. Is it carbon?
I don't know. Why does that I have no idea.
What does carbonate even mean?
When we get into anything having to do with chemistry, yeah. I feel like that's where I'm most lost.
Yeah.
I never took I took one chemistry class in high school.
I didn't take chemistry, I don't think.
Oh my God. And I would like, I think I just like copied off my friend's homework. I have no idea how I passed. I have no idea. But it's like one of the classes where every time I have those weird high school dreams, it's always chemistry. Oh my God. Yeah. I tried to get out of it by taking this class. It was at my high school called IPC. It was like integrated physics and chemistry. Mm-hmm. And it was like the very, it was very easy and it was still too hard for me. And I think I still got a 70. Okay. Does a panic attack count as cardiovascular exercise? Like, yes. You know, you have, cause now that I have this watch that tracks my heart rate, you know, you have those like target heart rate zones where yeah. it's supposed to be like, you know, you're training endurance or, you know, there's like another target heart rate zone for when you're like really getting your fitness on. So I don't understand why like a panic attack, if your heart is racing, why does that not count? Cause like when you're moving just to get your heart rate up, right?
But I think it has something to do with like the muscular system.
Your heart is muscle, baby.
I don't know what that means. What if I'm shaking really hard at the same time? It's so funny because like every time I go to the doctor, they're like, "Oh wow, did you run here from like the parking lot?" I'm like, "No, my heart rate is just fucking through the roof always. It's like always above 90.
Really?
Almost always, which I know is not good.
My heart rate is very slow.
That's good.
All the time.
I think like, that's good.
Close to catastrophic.
That's levels. No. It's better to have a slow. It's like Lance Armstrong's heart beats like 12 times a minute or something. I don't know.
I don't think that's true.
I just made it up. Okay. Okay. Never mind. You have another one, right?
What is Lance Armstrong's resting heart rate? No.
I'm gonna Google it.
Okay, what's
I'm
my not next gonna
Google
one?
It.
Actually, I have a very similar one. How does breathing actually work?
I have no idea.
Okay, because I have heard that the lungs are pretty much like they're literally like just bags, right?
And that they're flat.
Yes.
I always thought.
Oh
that
wait,
the lungs,
I didn't know that. I thought they expanded. Like, well, they paper do bags.
But I always thought that they were like perennially inflated. But no, it's like yeah, it's like a like any other yeah, type they of collapse, bag, right? Yeah, they get like flat and shit. Yeah. Okay, let me try to remember from my anatomy class. There's alveoli, right? Yeah. The little broccoli looking.
Yeah,
sons
that's
of
and I have that. I have asthma, so those get really fucked up.
And those whatever. Are in your lungs.
They're like it. Yeah, I don't know.
So it's something about pressure, right? Like it creates like negative pressure because your diaphragm moves. Is that right? Like, because okay, so your diaphragm is that muscle under your rib cage, mm-hmm. right? And when you move it. Okay, I was. Did I sound good for a minute?
Yeah, this is sounding good. Okay. I bet you're right.
I'm out now.
Okay,
out.
But what I'm wondering is like, okay, you know, sometimes we get those like lung treats for the dogs.
Yeah,
those are they're meaty. Like when you eat, if you eat a lung of an animal,
that's right.
It's not a bag,
thick. Right? It's thick. Oh shit, honey, I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe when you die, your lungs fill up. I don't. Okay.
Anybody in the health professions, I'm sure this is agonizing to listen to. Okay, so this is my last one.
Okay.
I think you've actually answered this for me before.
What?
It's something that used to puzzle me a lot. Is when humans like had to start cooking meat, otherwise they'd get sick from eating it. Like, when did that happen? Or like when and why did humans decide to start cooking meat?
Wow, that's very interesting, honey.
Because, I mean, I'm assuming for a while they didn't, right? Or, like, wasn't there a period of time before man invented fire or whatever? Like, discovered fire or invented fire? Right?
Yeah.
Like, if humans always, we were talking about chicken earlier, right?
Yeah.
Like, eating, hey, that's another one I could add. Yeah. Does all chicken uncooked just, like, naturally have salmonella? Or, like, is this, like, naturally going to make you sick?
I think so. I mean, I've gotten salmonella before from
I have,
chicken.
Too. I don't know if mine was from raw chicken.
I think it's all raw chicken. All raw chicken will make you sick.
And why is it that poultry has... And if that's the case, why did chicken become, like, the meat? You know? I mean,
We only have to look at the chicken sandwich wars going on right now. You know what I'm saying? If chicken is like that precarious, why do we eat it in like such huge quantities? And like, I, for some reason, had the fear of God put in me about uncooked chicken at some point. So yeah. Like, if I've touched it, like when I'm cooking chicken, I wash my hands like 75,000 times.
Same. No, and you should.
Like, see, like, but if it's like radioactive like this and your eyes are all big, why the fuck do we eat it?
I don't know. Don't look at me. Become a vegan then, honey. Shit.
I'm really upset.
You actually don't eat a lot of chicken. Anytime I make chicken, you end up having a corn patty.
Yeah, I love corn patties.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah. If anybody wants to help us.
Yeah, please comment below. Leave a question in the comments or something.
Let us know, please. I don't know, y'all.
Okay, so obsessions.
Yes.
What's your first one?
My first one is this book I've been reading called Set Boundaries, Find Peace by Nedra Glover Tawab. And she's like an Instagram person, and uh-huh. She's just always posting these very helpful little quick little notes of like, here's
how, like, to, helpful
here's,
thoughts.
Here's how to how you set boundaries.
Oh, like, that's great.
And like, it has been life-changing to read this book, and it's so practical and helpful. And she has basically like, these are things you can say. Because, you know, sometimes you want to go to the therapist and you're like, can you just tell me what to do?
Absolutely. And the therapist is some practical advice, yes. Man. Yeah.
And the therapist is like, the answer is within you. Uh-huh. And like, and I'm like,
you, did you accidentally go to a palm reader?
But anyway, this book is really practical. Like, if this comes up, you can say something like this. And it just feels like, oh,
that is so,
I have an answer.
Yep, that is so, God, I loved, you just mm-hmm. love to get some practical advice, right?
Totally.
Oh my God.
And I never considered that, like, being overworked and not having time for self-care and like, yeah, like burnout and being resentful, you know, all these things that I feel about you.
Oh my God! Oh my God.
Sorry. I just started listing them off, but I'm just talking about
actually,
it.
You know what? We need to have a long conversation after we record this podcast. I mean, I've been working on my boundaries with you too.
Yeah.
And now I hear you.
I'm like, what are you saying?
I'm sleeping on the couch tonight. No, but I think like you and I come from such similar, you know, speaking of fawning as like a survival mechanism or like mm-hmm. as a response to trauma or as a response to a threat, you and I are like, we've both really struggled with setting boundaries with people.
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean, it's really difficult.
Yes.
And isn't it so funny, like, from the outside looking, I mean, this is always the case, right? I mean, having the advantage of not being in the, you know, the person's situation, you can always, it's so easy to be like, holy shit, lady, just set some boundaries. Yeah. If you're watching somebody on TV or something.
Yes.
But in your own life, you're like, yeah, but you know, like, people are scary and you know,
and yeah, and I can handle it and I don't mind doing this really awful thing for 2 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Right. There, I just saw on somebody's Instagram today, they were like, I'm really working on, you know, I've decided to really work on boundaries. So I'm going to put in my, you know, my automatic email response is going to be like, I really don't have time to take on any other projects. Unless, of course, you know, it'd be really too much for you to have on your plate. I would be more than happy to do it. Like, please just go ahead and ask. Like, that is me, my friend.
That's so funny.
So my first obsession is the corgi that you made out of fondant that you put on my birthday cake.
Aww.
Mary did it up for my birthday. Oh my gosh. We were able to have people over, people who were fully vaccinated, of course, mm-hmm. for the first time in, you know, over a year.
Yeah.
And had such a nice celebration. And Mary did so much to make it special. She set up beautiful lights on our porch and or on our back deck rather, and made this beautiful chocolate cake with a fucking corgi, my favorite dog. The dog that is going to replace both of these dogs if I have my way.
Oh my God.
She made it out of fondant. It was your first time working with fondant, no?
Yes. I love all my baking shows and things like that. And every time they make a cake and they put fondant over it, it just looks so smooth and pretty. And I thought, I want to try doing that. And initially I was just going to put regular frosting on it and then just make like a fondant
like corgi, but then I was like, maybe I'll make it smooth
too. It was so.
So I made it smooth.
Make it smooth. Kalani is smooth.
And initially, I was going to make like a 2D corgi. Like I was just going to kind of like trace a drawing. You went know?
Balls to the
and
wall. Then,
but I was like, you know what? Let me see if I can mold it like I would out of clay. And I am, I feel like I am terrible at things like that.
Go big
but
it or was, go home.
I'm really glad I tried because I think it's really cute.
You're going to have to hook up with my niece, Cora.
Yeah.
Who is all about polymer clay right now.
That's great. And that's all I want to do.
Little figurines out of polymer clay.
There's a whole bunch of fondant left. They're coming over, right? So we can we can play.
I'm going to have to show. Did we get a picture of the corgi?
I think, I took a picture of it.
I'll post it on our Patreon. For
oh, I love it.
Okay. And what is your second obsession?
Oh, my second obsession?
Oh, you really want to know?
Oh, I really do. Actually, mine was the birthday and housewarming party.
Was it?
Yeah, it was just like... It was like otherworldly to spend time with people and to be like hosting again. I love nothing more than to just like nurture and put a charcuterie plate out.
I mean, to welcome like, people to our house and to see like, oh yeah, we can have people over here. Like oh my gosh. Oh yeah. And you love a charcuterie.
I loved it.
I'm going to sneak in another obsession. Okay. I got a new bath pillow. I'm very excited about it.
Hell yeah, babe.
I can't really be obsessed with it because I haven't used it yet, mm-hmm. but that and the shampoo brush that I bought, which I think is just like kind of like the dog's brush, but for people, mm-hmm. I'm going to stimulate my scalp.
It's so cute, honey. My last one is Naked and Afraid. I mean, I couldn't pretend that I was just like enjoying some sort of documentary, you know, like this is a different kind of documentary. But I mean, yeah, we're on like the seasons we've been watching are just so great.
Oh my God. It's one of the best things I've ever watched.
We've basically just been watching a lot of the All-Stars. So we're very familiar with some of the main.
We're getting to know all the personalities, baby. Yeah. Yep. Steve and Jeff and Laura and Suzanne.
Yeah.
All these freaks from the industry.
Love them all.
Okay. So my last obsession, actually, okay. I have two more. I haven't read this book yet, and I always feel silly when I have a book, but I haven't read it yet, and it goes on the list of obsessions, but it's this book that just came out by Danielle Drelinger, I think maybe is how you say her last name, and it's called The Secret History of Home Economics. First of all, I moved to let's all stop doing that with book titles, like The Secret History of Blank. It's enough. I get to decide these things. It's a trope. It's overdone. It's enough.
Okay, honey.
But anyway, I wrote it down in my notes. I wish we'd stop doing this with book titles. It is that important to me. But I'm interested in it because, you know, like people are like, I bet your mom took home economics in high school.
I took home ec.
Did you really?
Yes.
That was offered at your high school?
It was offered at my middle school, but holy it was also cow. Offered at my high school.
That's unusual.
Is it really?
Yeah. It has been phased out big time.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like, it's barely hanging on.
Cooking and cleaning, baby.
What did you do in your home ec class?
Sewing.
You did?
Yeah, I did sewing and cooking.
Did people do it because they were interested in it, or it was like a blow off class?
It was what every girl did. Like
really?
To like not do something else.
So it was sort of a blow off class, right?
Yeah.
So it was, this book really kind of delves into the history of home economics and really kind of revives it as being an actual like practical field of study and talks about women who would do shit like, you know, these women who, for example, would go into people's homes and help them understand like new appliances, like what, you know, speaking of survival also, what was enabled in terms of like how the quality of life was elevated by something like the refrigerator, for example. Yeah. Like it was a lot of like women who worked in home economics who would help with shit like that. And the New York Times review says this, women trained in home economics wrote recipes for food manufacturers, invented clothing care labels, and defined the federal poverty line. They set nutritional standards, demonstrated electrical appliances to rural residents, designed clothing patterns for female defense workers, and pioneered radio programming. They served as military dietitians and endured captivity as prisoners of war. One of their number, Bea Finkelstein, developed food for the Project Mercury astronauts. So this whole kind of list of like what became a legitimate sort of science, right? Mm-hmm. Like the author, I think, describes it as like, the goal is to change the world through the home, you know?
Wow.
Apparently she also talks a lot about how black women at HBCUs as far back as like
1868 were real pioneers of home economics. Wow. And they called it women's labor departments back then. But, you know, like for understandable reasons, I think I haven't read the book yet, but I'm sort of imagining that with this sort of like push for more women to enter the workforce, I think there's maybe a little bit more stigma around home ec than there used to be. Like this idea that like women would learn cooking and cleaning.
I mean, and honestly, initially when you're talking about this, I'm like, oh yeah, the glory days when we were in the kitchen, you know, right. Like,
but it's sort of more than
all
that.
All of the great things you did in the kitchen. I'm trying. The cynic in me is right. Like,
but no, but these are actual things that like revolutionized, you know, manufacturing and industry and yeah. like elevated people's standard of living and safety yes. and all kinds of things. Not just like cooking and cleaning, but right. like enhancing the sort of like technology of the home or people's facility to deal with yes. things in the home.
Yes.
But yeah, I understand there's stigma around it yeah. for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't even know the extent to which it still exists. I'd be interested to know. But, you know, I hear a lot this sentiment. I think this is maybe one of the most commonly held beliefs about education is this idea that I have encountered a lot that like people feel as if they don't learn enough practical skills. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't teach me about taxes and finances and all this stuff. Yeah. I'm like, motherfucker, home ec has been a thing.
Yeah.
That was part of home economics curriculum.
Right.
And so anyway, I just think it's really interesting and I can't wait to read it. So I'll be checking in again once I've read that.
Okay, great. Yeah. I love it.
Okay. My other one is the bass.
Yes.
So I love playing the bass. I haven't played it in a while, but like I feel actually, I think the last time was when I was dicking around with the bass that was in the studio.
When you had a football helmet on.
Yeah. But I love it. And Mary was like, oh, you know, my bass player is not going to be available for this one date. Would you want to play the bass? I was like, would I like to play the bass? So in like perfect, you know, pre-mania fashion, I ordered a little Gretsch short scale bass guitar because I don't have one anymore. And I'm just so excited to just start slapping the bass.
You're so cute. This is going to be so much fun.
And yeah, that's it. Anything else?
I can't wait. No, that's it.
All right.
That's all I got.
You want to do the poem thing?
Let's poem off.
All right. Poem off. You want to go first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, please. Or do you want me to go first?
No, I would love to go first.
Let's hear it.
This is a Palestinian poet who passed away in 2008, and he's known for he was an extremely prolific poet. His name is Mahmoud Darwish. This poem is called The Old Wound. Standing beneath the windows, on the street, standing, the treads of the abandoned stair do not know my step. No, nor does the window know. From the hands of the palm tree, I seek a cloud. As a fly falls into my throat and on to the wreckage of my humanity, passes over the sun and the feet of storms. Standing beneath the ancient windows, from my hand flies away a sparrow, and the garden's flowers ask me, how much of life just passed before this color and death met together in a moment?
Mm.
As I am passing through a cellar of incense, and pepper and the brass sound from my hand flies a sparrow. And in my eyes, silence replaces truth-telling. When the wind explodes in my skin and the sun stops stewing this drowsiness and I call everything by its proper name, then I shall buy a key and a new window with hymns of zeal. O heart, forbidden the sunlight of day and flowers and the festival enough.
Mm.
They taught us to guard love with hate and cover the dew on the roses with dust.
Mm.
O voice that flatters in my flesh, bird of flame, they taught us to sing and to love all the grasses that the field brings forth and ants and whatever summer leaves on the ruins of a house. They taught us to sing and hide our savage love, lest singing about love grows wearisome. Mm. When the wind explodes in my skin, I shall call everything by its proper name and strike off sorrow and night with my chain. Oh, my ancient windows.
Wow. Oh, that's so pretty. What a beautiful and just evocative, dreamy, perfect for a night when the moon looks like it does outside.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, what a luscious poem. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Mahmoud Darwish.
This one I think will pair pretty nicely with that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really do. And this is also appropriate for a moon night like this one. This is a poem by Chen Chen.
I love Chen Chen.
And it's called I Love You to the Moon And.
Ugh.
Not back. Let's not come back.
Mm.
Let's go by the speed of queer zest and stay up there and get ourselves a little moon cottage. So pretty. Then start a moon garden with lots of moon veggies. So healthy. I mean, I was already moonlighting as an online moonologist most weekends. So this is the immensely logical next step.
Mm.
Are you packing your bags yet? Don't forget your Sailor Moon jean jacket. Let's wear our Sailor Moon jean jackets while twirling in that lighter, queerer moon gravity. Let's love each other so good on the moon. Let's love the moon on the moon.
Oh, 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 yeah. Oh, I love that.
Isn't that a good Pride Month poem?
Oh,
too?
I love that. Yeah.
Let's love the moon on the moon.
Oh, and so, I just think that is just so...
Is it sweet? And
what
just
about also about being like present and here and now and like, let's love while we love.
Yes, you know,
Let's love this earth while we're on earth. Let's love each other while we're loving each other, you know?
Love each other like outrageously and indulgently. And yeah, like let's live like we're on the moon now. Yeah.
The Sailor Moon jacket.
Yeah, let's wear our Sailor Moon. Yeah, twirling in that lighter, queerer moon gravity.
I love the lighter, queerer moon.
I know.
Moon.
Oh, my sweet baby. I didn't even make you cry.
It's so beautiful. No, Chen Chen is like one of my favorite writers on earth. Ugh.
I'm a huge fan. I love that poem.
Great pick. I never heard that one.
So, y'all, I was going to save this for a separate discussion, but this is actually the last episode that we're... I'm just
kidding.
What? You look so concerned. What if I just quit the pod then? Did it scare you a little bit?
I did. I was like, oh, did we talk about this? I didn't
remember. Holy shit, there's a mouse in here.
Stop it. No more mice.
We love y'all.
Bye.